got to make sure the mic is on. Episode 92, What's Wrong with Ornie Adams? I'm very excited today. My guest personifies this podcast. This is exactly why I started What's Wrong with Ornie Adams. My entire life, I have come across some of the most interesting people. I don't know how it happens. They just appear in my life. And then I become friends with them, have really interesting conversations. And I wanted to record those conversations, much like Harry Smith recorded the old folk songs. And I wanted to share it with the world. And this guy, I'll introduce you in a second. I'm excited to have you on. I really am.
I'm happy to be here.
But first, I want to continue the conversation from episode 91 about tipping. Sharon Bellio, who is the producer, one of my producers at KFI AM Radio that I do a show on and fill in for Tim Conway Jr., just sent me this article because she saw my post from the last episode about tipping. Guilt tipping. More Americans feel pressured to tip. 75% of people are leaving excessively high tips because they're prompted to select a tipping option on digital devices. This is according to Forbes. Overall, just under a third of Americans say they feel pressured to leave a bigger tip on digital devices as opposed to when there was just a tip jar. Remember the tip jar? Anybody remember cash? I use cash all the time. You got to see these idiots at the register. They can't even figure out how to make change. And they're missing right, Mark? They're missing fives. They're like, you give them 100 and then you'll get like 79 singles back.
I can't tell you how many times I've had to tell the person behind the cashier what the change was.
They do not know how to do change anymore.
If it didn't come up on the screen.
Now, here's my problem. Here's what's wrong with tipping and the guilt. There are more and more people asking for tips that never did before. And you used to have a meal and you would tip at the end on how good the service was. The concept of gratuity has historically targeted servers who agree to a lower wage in order to qualify for a tip. And now they've got these tablets. So you pay, you go out for coffee, and then they swing this tablet around and the person's right in your face. So you used to get handed a check and the waiter or the server would be off in the distance and you could decide how much to tip. Not anymore. Now, they're there. And even at the table, they'll put the credit card in some machine and hand it to you and stand over you. They lord over you while you do the tip. And that's fine afterwards. But it feels like a lot of people that were pre-tipping. Okay, there's pre-tipping going on, which makes no sense. Because now you don't even know what the service you're going to get. Like in the last podcast, I took an order to go, Mark. Guess what happened? I got home, the chicken salad.
Oh, right. It wasn't what it was supposed to be.
It was shrimp.
You had to take it back.
It was shrimp. San Antonio paralegal Laura Gonzalez called the entire interaction super awkward while they stand over you waiting for a tip. She said, I haven't even got my drink yet. Why would I tip you? I think it really steers customers away because of how uncomfortable it can be for us. It feels awkward like they're performing the service based on the tip they've either got or not gotten. That's what's wrong with the world on top of so many other things. And it drives you nuts.
I got an example if you want one.
Let's hear it. Let me introduce you first because we have a rock and roll. Uh-oh. I'm going to call you a legend.
Uh-oh. No, I don't know.
Okay, I agree. Maybe not.
Pre-legend.
But
you got to die to be a legend.
Okay, well, let's not do that yet. Now, this guy I met at one of my shows, and I'm really glad that you cover my theme. We're going to talk about all that stuff in a minute, but Mark Mann is here. And Mark Mann is a guy that I met after one of my shows at the Hollywood Improv. I saw you in the audience wearing one of my shirts, which meant either you ordered it off of my website or you had been to one of my shows.
I'd been to a previous show. I think it was at the Ice House.
At the Ice House.
Yeah, and we said hello then, but I bought a shirt and I bought a pillow.
A pillow. Did you buy a pillowcase?
I bought a pillowcase.
I gotta tell you who Mark Mann has played
People
with.
People are gonna go, who the heck he's talking to? Who the heck is he talking
to? Well, that's what I said when I met you, and then I Googled you, and then I figured it all out.
Oh, that's what that was.
Mark Mann has played with. Did you play with George Harrison?
Yeah. I mean, in the studio.
What do you mean, yeah, in the studio? This is a Beatle. Mark Mann has played with, amongst others, including Orny Adams. We performed together upstairs at the Improv on their piano. Has performed with George Harrison, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, Prince, Eric Clapton, Jeff Lynne, and ELO, Electric Light Orchestra. Tom Petty!
A few people you might have heard
Red Hot Chili Peppers, Sheryl Crow, Kenny Loggins, Madonna, Neil Diamond, who's a great songwriter.
Oh, God, you know, he did pretty good.
Neil Young, Barbara Streisand, John Fogerty,
yeah,
which is CCR. Mark Mann is my guest. He's a guitar player. You're going to talk
musician.
In a second. Musician,
whatever.
Composer.
I play keyboards as well as guitar.
You play everything.
And I've worked with another guy that people might have heard of, Danny Elfman. I played in Oingo Boingo and have helped him with his film scores for about 35 years. So.
Yeah, you have over 50 film credits.
Yeah.
So let me just say how we met, because you came up to me.
Actually, I was wearing your T-shirt.
Yes.
Lower Your Expectations, which is a great T-shirt. And get it on the website. I was wearing it at the Improv, I think, and you spotted me. You'd already done some crowd work, and then you spotted me. You said, this guy's wearing my T-shirt.
I thought it was so cool. And then I wanted to thank you afterwards, and you were with your girlfriend, and somehow it came up that you were a musician. And I get this all the time. People come up to me. And then you started to look
I'm sure you do.
Familiar. You started to look familiar.
Yeah, well, I don't look quite the same as I did years ago, but...
If you want to know who Mark Mann is, he is the one playing guitar, the lead, with Prince, Tom Petty, Jeff Lynne, Danny Harrison, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, My Guitar Gently Weeps, right?
Now, people do this all the time. Those are actually two different things. The one with Tom Petty and Prince was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction of George Harrison.
Yeah.
But the other one was actually at the Royal Albert Hall in London, and that was the memorial for George.
So which one do I watch all the time?
Concert for George was the memorial at the Royal Albert Hall.
And that's the one where Prince...
No, Prince was not at that one. He was at the...
So I got it right.
And it's two different things. Prince was at the... Yes, you did.
I got it right, so why am I being corrected on my own podcast?
No. You got it right. Most people keep getting it wrong, but...
Well, that's what's wrong with the world.
Paul and Ringo were not at the Hall of Fame induction, and people combine them all the time.
Okay, but the video that I watched over and over...
Was Concert for George.
Was Concert for George, because when my parents gave me the Time Life Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum live 9 DVD box set.
Woo!
And on that, so I was once again way ahead of the curve. You hacks that figured this out after Prince died, that he was a great guitarist and had played on this track. I had watched this track over and over and over on DVD. I used to shut myself in to be creative and just listen to music over and over again. And this was one of the tracks. And when I saw, I said,
you got good taste.
I go, this is...
This guy knows good music.
I have listened to you play guitar so many times. You've enriched my life unknowingly. And what's fascinating is, and you knew me. How did you discover me?
Well, you mentioned my girlfriend, Debbie, and she had listened to KFI for the longest time. She's an actress, and she was driving around LA, and she'd listen. And then you came on subbing for Tim Conway on KFI, and she just, this guy's great. She suggested we go to see you at the Ice House, so we did. I think I checked out a couple of your YouTube clips, which were amazingly great. And we went to the show, and I had such a great time that I went up and said hi to you afterward and bought the T-shirts and stuff. So then I made a point of saying, you know, whenever he's around, we're going. So, and then we had a great time that night. I think we came to the Improv again, and you actually opened your show with While My Guitar Gently Weeps,
yes,
which
yes.
was a real nice thing. That was a real nice thing to do.
Actually, the song that you're playing on.
Yeah.
And you're playing the lead at the beginning, and you hand that off to Prince. What is that like?
Well, it was pretty amazing. I mean, that particular Hall of Fame induction was in New York at the Waldorf Astoria, and he was being inducted, and we were inducting George Harrison, and the producers, and then we went, ooh, let's just combine them. And so Tom Petty went, okay, he can play at the end, but Mark's doing the main song. Mm. You know, they wanted him to just jump in. And the thing about Prince is he's an amazing guitar player. He's an amazing musician, but he's very shy. He was very shy. And he kind of came up to me and said, so let's go over. So here I am backstage going through the changes and telling him, watch me for when you come in. And if you watch really closely on that video, somebody released a re-edit version, but the original one, you can actually see me nod to Prince to say, now you go.
Wow. So you guys don't rehearse this for like a week before?
Well, with we had Steve Ferroni on drums from the Heartbreakers. We had Steve Winwood on organ and just
underrated.
Scott Thurston from the Heartbreakers was on bass. And we had a lot of amazing musicians. We have Jim Capaldi from Traffic on percussion. We had all these great musicians. And so this was the big finale that they wanted to have, and they added Prince. But we rehearsed.
So if they didn't add Prince, you would have done the lead till the end?
Probably so.
And does that bum you out a little bit?
No, it was like, this is an opportunity to be on stage with one of the greatest musicians ever.
Are you in your head? Are you thinking, don't screw it up? Don't. Like, that's what I would think. Like, don't miss a note. I mean, don't be out there of tune.
There is a little bit of pressure. And the interesting thing, Jeff Lynne, who I had the pleasure of meeting and right around the Traveling Wilburys when he was doing the album with George and Bob Dylan and the rest of the guys. It was, you know, it was him sort of taking me into his world, and I became, you know, engineering with him and doing all this stuff. So when he's standing next to me and I feel that, you know, support and energy, and Tom was also great. You know, there's just no.
Was Tom a great guitarist?
He was, in the sense that he knew exactly what to play as a rhythm guitar player and how to write songs with very specific guitar parts and feels. And Mike Campbell is the Heartbreakers guitar player, and the two of them together, probably one of the greatest guitar duos in a band ever.
I think that's what Keith Richards says about, people say, you're a great guitarist. He said, I'm good, but with Ron Wood,
we're better.
The best.
Yeah, that's true.
So does Prince make you better on that night?
Probably so. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you remember the way he was doing some very cool things on stage that people still ask me about, like, where did the guitar go?
Yeah, he threw it. Somebody caught it, right?
Well, I tell people, I mean, there's, you know, you look at, you know, some comments on some website or underneath the YouTube video or something, and people are going, oh, it went up to heaven and all these. And it's very cool, and it's a very neat. But, you know, I tell people is, you don't ask a magician how he does his tricks.
Okay.
You just don't give that stuff away.
I've watched it so many times. And when I watch these videos, I create a story on my head. So there's like, I've seen, like with the Rolling Stones, I've studied Mick and Keith, and I see conflict and I see resolution. I tell a story, and I felt like...
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that.
I would sit you down and tell you this one where I see Keith acting out. He yells at somebody in the audience, and you see him scolded by Mick, and you see him sort of like a kid, like feel bad. And then later in the song, Mick comes over and puts his arm around him, and Keith feels good again. I tell this whole story, but in this one, you look, do you not know this is how we watch music?
Well, it's nice to hear how the civilians.
I'm very much a civilian.
perceive this, but you know, there's some really neat moments, like Prince played to Danny Harrison, George's son Danny, and he kind of turned around and leaned backwards and fell backwards while he was playing, and Danny just cracks into a smile that is the biggest wide, bright-eyed smile ever. And that's kind of special, because it's like a fun, loving musician doing things for each other.
It felt to me, because Danny could never appreciate his father's George Harrison, the way that somebody that grew up with the Beatles. And I think he was up there thinking, I can't believe Prince is playing my dad's song. And I thought Prince, because Petty to me is very understated, Jeff Lynn of ELO. You got to see the guy. Always has the hat on and the glasses. And full disclosure, legal disclosure, we have the same hairdresser, Luke. I can't. Listen, I only have things to say about Jeff Lynn, but I've been watching Jeff Lynn. Jeff Lynn is one of those guys like you. You guys are both like Forrest Gump. You just end up in all these videos.
I've actually had that where people say you're the Forrest Gump of rock and roll because I show up in all these different things.
Yeah, there you are again. But I felt like Prince was really showboating. And I thought there was a moment where Jeff Lynn and you're in the background and Tom Petty just looked at each other like,
going, what is this?
Come on, just play.
You know, but it's got over 100 and X million views on YouTube.
Most of those are me. On different devices.
Okay. Yeah. it hit a nerve with people. First of all, it's one of George's greatest songs. It's an iconic song. Mm-hmm. And this was a very moving moment where he's being remembered and inducted. And just to have, Prince could have said, nah, I'm doing my set. He did three songs of his own.
Says no to a Beatle?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or
a Beatles song or a chance to play.
You ask about being nervous of some pressure and all this other stuff. Imagine you show up and you've got your three songs worked out with your band. You're being inducted. He was inducted that mm-hmm. night, Prince, with his band. I didn't know that. Yeah. The reason he was there was because he was being inducted himself. So imagine you show up, you got your three songs rehearsed, you do the rehearsal and you're going to do the show. And then the producer, like maybe an hour and a half before the show starts, says, I want you to play with the George Harrison thing.
You got to be ready to go. Are musicians, are you required to be able to play any great song at any time?
Yeah, it's on the AFM card there. You must be able to play all songs at all times.
I think it's amazing that you guys can just get together. What I've always loved about music, where this certainly does not exist in comedy, is it's very collaborative and supportive. And you guys all get up on stage together and play and support each other and play each other's songs. You don't get mad if somebody covers somebody else's song. Why is that? What do musicians have that comedians don't have that allows them to be supportive and collaborative?
Well, there's a lot of rivalry. There's a lot of bands that were trying to fight, there was the Stones Beatles thing in the 60s where supposedly there was a feud where they were trying to fight each other and they're going, no, we're just all trying to make good music.
Right.
And telling good stories. And that's what I think comedians do, is tell good stories in a way that makes us look at the absurdity of life. So that storiness is what musicians are doing within the context of a song. And we just like making people happy listening to something that makes them feel emotions. Mm. And I think there's a lot to be said. Like when we were talking at the improv about musicians and comedians, there's a kindred spirit there because we're both doing something on stage to tell stories that make people happy.
Yeah. Do you find you enjoy comedy that's more rhythmic?
You know, you talk about how you experience music and stories and things like that. I take a delight in the content, the topic, but I also take the delight in the performance. Like we came to another show at the Improv and you graciously said, hey, come over to the Laugh Factory with us. And it was a really cool thing. It was like a little bit of that rock star. Now, and we're going on a little tour. We're going over to the next club. So, and you're getting the VIP treatment, the bouncers waving you in. And
you're with Tony Adams.
Yeah, it's like, wow, this is really this is like great. So the parallel there is, all the backstage and getting in and, anything you want. You want some this or that. But then I see you do a set and I'm thinking about like, musicians who tour and go from city to city and they play the same songs and you have to come up with that energy to give it something new for that audience. And you did it. And I don't know why, but I thought of Ginger Baker. I just thought of you like up there and just like,
wow,
beating it and making it great and everything, the nuance and the timing. So I look at it as like,
that's the drummer for Cream.
For Cream. Yeah. And
one of the most admired and respected drummers.
I think he was also in Blind Faith, maybe? I think he might have been.
Maybe.
But he definitely.
I can't believe that's quite a comparison. Thank you.
Well, it's like what you say as far as musicians and comedians. you've got to do in different cities, like you're traveling all the time, right? Right. Where are you going now? You want to plug something?
I mean, I'll be tomorrow night. Well, it will have already happened. But I'll be in Bellflower, California. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. The following week on Thursday, I'll be at the Comedy Magic Club, I think the 28th of September. Then October 6th, I'm at, where am I? The Ice House in Pasadena. But most importantly, I'll be in Cleveland at the Agora Theater Friday, October 13th.
Oh, so you can go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum.
It'll be right around the corner. And yeah. I've gone several times. In fact, one of the most moving exhibits I've ever seen was, and you can hear somebody doing.
Somebody's
chopping down a tree in the neighborhood.
Yeah, well, you know, I actually have a license for shooting guys with blowers.
Oh, please, go.
It's a permit you got to sign. And if anybody's making blower noises or gardening noises when I'm actually recording, I have
a
license.
We never have gardening noises on Friday. Usually it's a Monday, Tuesday. And then the people behind me, I can't stand them. They'll do Saturdays.
Oh, well.
But this is unbelievable.
This is, of course, like yesterday when I was recording a new piece of music for your show. Of course, what happens, there's some kid running around. Never happens ever.
Wow.
Years. I've got open mics. I'm recording my vocals and stuff. And all of a sudden, there's some 10-year-old kid running around screaming at the top of her lungs. I'm going, timing.
That's the curse of Orny Adams. What's amazing to me is that you've played with some of the greatest musicians of the world, and you're excited that the usher or the bouncer at the Laugh Factory is ushering you in. That to me is unbelievable.
Well, you know what? It's a little bit like seeing the behind the scenes of the comedy world and loving that. And thank you for sharing that.
Oh, man. Well, I'm in awe. How does it happen? How do you end up on stage?
This is what we were going to talk about. I don't know if you want to get this book out or not. And we'll talk about, you're talking about Concert for George, how that came about?
Concert for George, or just what was the first big break that put you in the league? Mark, first of all, are you that good? Are you that good?
I don't know. I keep having people tell me that, but I keep wanting to get better.
When did you start playing the guitar?
Well, here's the thing is you're in L.A. I grew up in L.A., so I north end of the valley, and I'm learning guitar, playing to records and doing all this stuff and, do bands. And then I kind of said, I got to get a little legit here and have something to fall back on. So I went to UCLA and got degrees. And while I was there, I became a conductor of the choral department. So I have a whole background in the legit classical orchestration. And that's what I do for Danny is orchestration with Steve Bartek. And I conduct the choir. Every choir you heard on the film scores, that's me conducting them.
Oh, wow.
And doing the vocal arrangements.
You got the little stick and everything? You do
the
little stick
with
thing?
The choir, you don't use the stick.
You don't?
With the orchestra, you use the stick.
Do you know that I have such respect for music that every one of my specials, More Than Loud, Takes the Third, Path of Most Resistance, I've written to classical music. And then I come out to the music.
Wow.
So More Than Loud, at the beginning, you'll see I come out to Ravel's Bolero. And then in Takes the Third, it's Bizet's Carmen. To the point where we actually remixed. We remixed. Sorry, I'm looking at my phone. I'm waiting for my new iPhone delivery.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, not to be unprofessional.
Uh-oh.
But we actually remixed with The Arrogance of Us. You'll have to go back and listen. We remixed.
I'm available as a music consultant.
Well, wanted to say. Wait a minute. That's one of my final questions. We'll get into. I'll say it now.
Yeah, we're jumping around.
We're jumping around.
He's got notes.
It's a great interview.
He's got notes.
When you're jumping around like this. Will you agree?
I think maybe we should take a pause while this guy cuts this tree down.
Yeah. Is it driving you nuts?
Like,
yeah. I don't know where it is. I don't know what's happening. I wish the iPhone would come now. Will you agree to write and produce and record the music for my next comedy special?
Oh, on the air here, huh? Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look down, which makes you think you're going
to... Well, no, I'm starting to think of there's not that much music in a comedy
special. No, it's just
it's the opener and the closer.
It's 30 seconds,
yeah.
But you did my theme song, which we can talk about.
Well,
at any point...
It's
driving you nuts, isn't it?
It's like they're chopping down a palm tree or something.
Yeah. Do you want to pause for a minute?
Do you think we can ask him how long he's going to be?
We can if you want.
Only because, I walk out there and I say, hey, give us 45 minutes so we can...
They don't care. These guys don't care. But you can tell if it's like a big job or not. But that's what's fun about where we are. We're in a trailer in my backyard.
I love this. I really love this. We'll talk about something that isn't Sonic. I love being in this, what is this, like from the 50s, this trailer?
60s, and I call it Big Yellow. Can you guess why I call it Big Yellow? Besides the fact it's yellow.
It's like the big pink, but yellow.
You got it. You got it. It's a tribute to the band.
Yeah.
Live from Big Pink.
Yeah. I watched a documentary on the band just recently, a couple Which months one? Ago, and it was a follow-up one. It was really good. I actually got to hang out with Robbie Robertson at the studio called The Village here in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I was working in one room, and he had an actual writing room in the other place. And he's just incredible. But my God, those guys came up with some music that was just amazing.
What was so great about their music?
Wow. There's this greater than the sum of the parts things that happen. You have these, each musician is phenomenal, and then you have them together and the spurring the other on to be their best kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
but was it so different? See, like, I grew up and everyone said the Kinks. It was groundbreaking, but I listened to it and I go, well, this sounds like everybody else, because I didn't hear it at the time when it was so new and fresh. So is there something about the band? Because I know they're so admired and respected. There are some people, it's getting louder. They're actually going to start chopping my trees down.
It looks like they're cutting down your gate.
I got to tell you something. I hate Los Angeles.
Well, you know,
I hate that every single day there are noises.
We're gonna get you a studio that's soundproofed. We're going to get you in a studio that actually has sealed doors and windows with soundproofing, and then maybe
then that would be too easy. Nothing's supposed to be easy in my life. Why do you think my first album was called Path of Most Resistance? This is supposed to happen. Like this, you're like, I'm so excited to have you here. The conversation is flowing so easily.
Well,
and then this guy,
he's coming. You know, hey, look. You know, he filled that up this morning. He's got his little, you know, chainsaw out there.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, he lives for that chainsaw.
How much gas do you think he has left?
Who knows? But it's more like, you know, I see a, it's like you give a guy a hammer, everything's a nail.
Yeah.
You give a guy a chainsaw, everything needs to be cut off.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to cut trees. But
oh, so let's get back to the band while there's no noise, because Robbie Robertson, yeah. I'll say this.
Yeah.
He's a good guitarist, not a great guitarist.
You know, it's all about what was serviceable to the band and what was needed. It's not like not everyone can be Jimi Hendrix, and not everyone needs to be Jimi Hendrix.
That's interesting. Yeah, because like Charlie Watts, the drummer for the Rolling Stones, like, I love this guy. He was just really like,
you know, I always loved the Stones. Sticky Fingers was a huge record for me.
Do you remember when it had the real zipper?
Yeah.
Album.
And you have this sort of like respect for the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and a lot of bands and things. But until Olivia Harrison got me tickets to the Hollywood Bowl performance somewhere in the early 2000s of the Rolling Stones, and I was like five rows away, I was transfixed with how great a drummer Charlie Watts was.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody else, I mean, Mick is an amazing performer and everybody's playing, Keith. But my God, he's the heart of the band. He really was. And the story you talk about where, you know, Keith does something, Mick comes over and puts that. The great,
it's from the documentary Shine a Light.
The somewhere along the way, I heard this anecdote where they were supposed to be going to a show and they're in a hotel room and everybody's in different rooms. And Mick bursts into Keith's room and goes, you know, where's Charlie? Where's my drummer? And he goes, you know, and they go and they walk down the hall. And they're pounding on his door.
Yeah.
And he says, where's my drummer? And Charlie comes out and goes, I'm not your drummer. You're my singer.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
And that was like, all right. And that was an anecdote that actually Mick told later about when anyone would ask in the press, when are you guys going to tour again? He'd basically go, it's up to Charlie. It's when Charlie feels like he wants to go out.
Wasn't Levon Helms like that, the drummer for the band?
For the band?
Yeah, because I feel like his mom wouldn't let him play in the band or something because he had a classical degree, much like you, from a university.
I don't know about that. But I have a good friend, Steve Bartek, guitar player for Oingo Boingo.
Yeah.
And he also does, you know, work with Danny and all these orchestrations on the films. And the funny thing is that you remember the band Strawberry Alarm Clock?
I actually don't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What is that?
Incense and Peppermints was a huge hit.
Oh, yeah.
A huge kind of bubblegum pop psychedelic hit in the 60s. and he played flute on it.
Okay.
And he was like 16 or 17 at the time, and they wanted to go on tour. This thing went to number one in the United States, and they wanted to go on the tour, and his mom said, "You're not going, you're going to college."
Wow. There you go.
So they wouldn't let him leave to go on tour.
That's happened to a couple of people that screwed up and left the bands early or couldn't go on tour because their mom wouldn't let them.
Well, you know, it's like...
You know, I had a similar experience when I went to see the Police. Why, Sting. Okay, I was doing a show. This is one of the cool times as a comedian. There used to be something called Kaboo, a festival called Kaboo, where bands would play, but they also had a comedy tent. And I was there, and I did a solo show, and I did a show with the late Bob Saget, who was great. And when my show was done, they said, "Do you want to go see Sting?" I said, "I'd love to." And they ushered me, not in the front row, but beyond, there's like a pit where there's security. I was right up against the stage. I was feet. I was as close to you as I was to Sting. And I always admired the Police and Sting. I thought it was great. But when I was that close... I'm still getting shivers. Blew me away. I mean, I thought, this is an artist. This is a true artist. And now all his work retroactively speaks differently to me.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's an interesting psychological phenomenon where the meaningfulness of that moment where you were that close to see how he does his art, that affected your perception of all the things you've heard already.
You know what else? Maybe you'll get a kick out of this. I was in Beverly Hills once, and I was out to eat. Yeah, just once. Thank God.
Just once.
Hey, if you can only be in Beverly Hills once in your career, you're a success.
Listen, crossing the border is pretty tough there.
Yeah. But I was there having lunch and a business meeting, and I saw all of a sudden coming down the street the biggest paparazzi scrum I think I've ever seen. I'm like, who could this be?
Taylor Swift.
Well, normally it's something like that, or Britney Spears in her day. And so all of a sudden, from the pack, and I'm sitting outside, and this star walks as close as we are from each other, right past me, and I'm with this guy. He's a manager. He's trying to get my business, and it's Paul McCartney.
Oh.
And as Paul, and I'm about to do the worst British accent you've ever heard, so I apologize to everybody in Britain. As Paul is passing the table, he just passes us, there are two cops behind him. And the guy I'm eating with said, to be funny, "Who's that?" And he turned around and goes, "It's Ringo." "It's Ringo."
This is Paul doing
Paul.
It. Yeah.
And he had a sense of humor, but I saw a sadness in his eyes. And my thought was, there is a guy that has never been able to enjoy a Beatles song like us.
He enjoyed them while he was making them.
Sure.
And he enjoyed them in the playbacks in the control room.
Which is a way we can't enjoy it. But it wasn't played at his prom. He didn't get laid to his song, you know, for the first time to his song. You know, it's like there's a lot of memories. It's like music is such a great sense memory, and you guys don't get to enjoy. Like, you're working on some projects now, and we'll talk about that towards the end, but I'll say it now. You're working on the fig.
Ruby Ate the Fig is a progressive rock band with Middle Eastern influences, and we've done a couple of albums that are out there. There's one called Caress the Moon, and there's a couple others, and I actually, you know what? I brought one for you.
A fig?
I brought you. There.
Oh! There's... I don't know what to play this in, but thank you.
Do you have something that plays pieces of metal that are round?
I don't know what this is. It's not an MP3.
It's basically a cardboard holder for something that used to be playable in a CD player.
Hold on. Thank you. Thank you. I've been waiting for a new...
But at least you get to see the name of the band and the logo. And
Ruby and the Fig.
Ruby Ate the Fig.
Ruby Ate the Fig. Yeah. And I wish you brought me figs. You did bring me this. Thank you.
Oh.
I wish all my guests would bring me gifts like this.
Uh-oh. So I'm going to set a precedent.
Look at this.
Yeah. Don Julio.
1942. This is not the cheap stuff. Mark Mann brought me this because he lost a bet. What was the bet?
No, it was no bet. I think it was, again, you were on stage and you said something about... How many shows have you been to? You were talking to me, and I said something like, not nearly enough, and it cracked you up.
Yeah.
And you said something about, we got to have a drink. And I said, well, what do you like? And you said, tequila.
Yeah.
So I said, all right, I'll get you some tequila.
And but this is the good stuff.
That was me keeping my word about getting you some tequila.
But that's the good tequila. You could have.
Well, you know, that's. Listen, as I was buying it, there's a guy behind me. He goes, yeah, that's what I'm sipping tonight.
Wow. Yeah. I was wondering if you bought it or stole it from the green room. Like one of these stars. What goes on?
I still have a bottle of champagne that I haven't opened from Olivia Harrison. That was for when we won the Grammy for the Concert for George. And it was like a
congratulations. You have a Grammy, right?
You're Well, as being part of the performance of something. That video won the Grammy.
That's how I feel. Like I say, I won a Teen Choice Award for MTV because the show I was on won it. But yeah, but do you have an actual physical Grammy? They give you one?
It's part of a plaque that is the whole album video that won, and there on there is the Grammy.
What goes on backstage? Is there a lot of drug use? Women, what's happening?
You know, I've been saying this lately because as we're all getting a little bit older, but you know what's amazing is that the music keeps people younger and energetic, and we love doing it. So, yeah. But it used to be this. I just did a show. We did Abbey Road Live. I think I sent you information about it, but you were out of town.
I was out of town.
So we did Abbey Road Live, which ain't easy because they never had to do it. They never had to do it from beginning to end. They never had to do it live. They actually, you know, would record it and then add bits and do it. Right. So a great group of guys, including Jeff Allen Ross from Badfinger, the singer from Badfinger.
Okay.
He was in the band, and we have David Blasucci and Christopher Alice on drums, who's a cool drummer to do Ringo because, like Ringo, he's left-handed, but he plays a right-handed kit. And that's what gave Ringo his specific sound, was he's a left-handed human who plays a right-handed kick, so he led around the drums differently and the fills are different. Anyway, so we did the show, Abbey Road Live, and I lost my thread now. What were we talking about? Shows?
What goes on backstage? Stop trying to get out of it, Mark. Tell me about the drugs and the women.
So we're about to go on to do Abbey Road Live.
Is there Viagra backstage now that you're getting older?
Yeah. I'm talking to the guy. Elliot Easton from The Cars came by to watch the show. He's a good friend of mine.
Boston band.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great guitar player. Anyway, and the joke was, as I said, you know, it used to be back in the day before you go on, you'd have a little cocaine, you have a little Jack Daniels, something to get you going and something to mill you down, right? Nowadays, it's caffeine and ibuprofen.
So you were doing a lot of drugs with these guys.
No. Actually, the funny thing is like when you talk about seeing an artist like Sting or seeing artists that you really see how great they are, and you have to be not hurting yourself to be able to be the artist that you want to become. So there's a lot of stuff where, you know, back in the day, you experiment, you do things. But the real truth of it is to be able to express these emotions and express the music and be the artist that you really want to be, you can't be messing around with that stuff.
Interesting. Is Eric Clapton as great as people say he is?
Well, you know, there's that whole story about meeting your idols, and all I can say is that when I first met him, it was like within about an hour, you go, oh, it's not just that he's got this history of all these great records with Cream and solo and all these other stuff, everything that he's done in his musical career, it's because of who he is as a person. Read his biography. His autobiography, and there's a lot there to tell you about how he became who he is. And all I can say is that the music is being channeled through him, through his life
experience.
Well,
what is it? Yeah, what is it? What is he channeling?
It's like asking, what is capital it?
So he has it.
It's probably a sense of humanity and awareness of the world and what music can do to help people get through this crazy life we all live.
But
a devotion to excellence. It's really one of the things that you know, with Jeff Lynne recording with him for 20-25 years, you see the attention, like what I was doing recording for your thing yesterday in a hurry.
We're gonna play that at the end.
you kind of like. And you do it with your writing and people who care about what it is that you're putting out in the world. You just care about doing it with excellence.
Right.
And so we, as a species, revere people who put in the time and effort to give excellence to their work.
Yeah.
And so Eric is like someone, I mean, I still get chills on some of the songs that he's recorded.
Does he have a physical advantage like a LeBron James?
I don't think that applies to music.
Is he faster? Although they call him slow hand. Is he faster? Does he hit the notes different? Like Ray Charles. Ray Charles hits the notes differently than anybody else I know. It's almost like, is he going to, like, you're waiting and like, where's the note? And then it comes in. Like, he's just, like, it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a second off. And I grew up in a family where my dad would point this out to me. And I.
That's a nice dad.
Great parents. They gave me my mom and dad gave me the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's like, this is great. You know, learn some great music and appreciate good stuff.
Because on that, I discovered Al Green.
Oh my gosh.
Whoa. Al Green. Like, how is this not? Why aren't people wearing Al Green shirts or Buddy Guy? Or I saw for the first time, I studied it, James Brown. I said, this is where rap came from and hip hop and the outfits and Michael Jackson and the lapels.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it all.
Oh, yeah.
I see it all.
I understand it.
I get it. At least I have my own interpretation, which is what I love. You know, Bob Dylan.
Before you go into shows nowadays, you got to tip the band before you go in.
Is that true? Is that, you have a flip around
no,
screen?
No, instead of having that jar up in front on the stage, It's like before you walk in, you got to throw something in the tip jar. Tip ahead of time.
Bob Dylan, who I love, and you've never played with.
I almost toured with him. Tom Petty referred me to take over when his guitar player's wife was having a baby.
Oh.
And it's sort of like a missed opportunity, but a dodged bullet, because that was at the period where Bob was deciding he wanted to be the lead guitar player. I don't know if, you know, and he was doing stuff where he was out front playing electric guitar for like 15 minutes on a song and stuff.
Did that in the 60s too, didn't he?
He went electric just as far as playing his songs electric. Yeah. And that was like a huge deal because he was a folk artist and it was, you know, everybody reacted badly, but there is a story relating to Bob with the Concert for George, if you want to get
what
into
is that?
That.
Tell me that.
Whoop, here comes, for everybody
listening, this is the most professional podcast you'll ever hear.
We've got the Ride of the Valkyries coming in.
It's as close as
the helicopters
can get.
Swarming.
Yeah, it's really a bummer. It's really a bummer because this is just going so great.
Well, you know what we'll have to do is don't say anything for a second. Okay, see, now I can sample that off of your podcast and I can do a noise reduction thing and get rid of that.
Oh, you can?
All the way through.
Could you really?
Yeah, that's what I did on the Beatles songs.
Wait a minute. Is that true? Should I send you this audio to reduce that sound?
It's possible, especially if there's some of it on its own.
Then you have to listen to the whole thing.
No. What it is that the software analyzes the waveform signature of the noise.
Okay. I don't even know what it is.
It's a motor. The guy's got a huge,
but is he
buzzsaw and a blower?
Is he blowing or is he?
Is he blowing or cutting?
Yeah. What's going on?
Anyway, so back to the.
It gives this podcast flavor.
Well, you know, that's what I. One of the things that Jeff Lynne called me to do, and how I got into this whole thing with him was, Yoko Ono had found some cassettes of John's in the 90s, early 90s, that were just him playing on piano and singing some song ideas at the Dakota in New York. And she got in contact with Olivia Harrison, also Paul, and said, you know, I've got these. Do you think we... And that was when they were doing the Beatles anthology, which was all the retrospective.
Which you worked on.
Well, yeah. And in this capacity was... We have these songs of John's, but they're literally like, a $30 cassette player stuck on top of a piano and him hitting recording and playing and singing. And there's noise of the cassette.
I love.
You know, it's all this.
Yeah.
And at the time, being technically savvy and knowing all the gears and the toys and stuff, a product had just come out from DigiDesign called Intelligent Noise Reduction. So anyway, Jeff called me and said, look, can we do anything with this? And I actually took those cassettes, loaded them into the computer and got rid of all the noise. And then Jeff and I mocked up by playing guitars and drums and bass and piano and keyboards, yeah, mocked up what became the new Beatles songs on the anthology so that the Beatles would go, oh, this can be done.
Wow. And it had it been done before? Did you invent this entire process?
The software, I think, had been out for maybe a month.
Hmm.
So there was a piece of software back then before Pro Tools, which was Studio Vision Pro from Opcode, actually had the ability to do audio in there. Anyway, getting down to the technical rabbit hole here, the point is that you can update these things, and they just did it. We worked on a third song, which was going to go on the third. There were three anthology records, and it's called Now and Then, and they just did it with AI with Giles Martin.
Hmm.
The son of George Martin.
Yeah.
And they just released another new Beatles record using AI technology to fix it all up.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I feel so bad that it stopped. If it continues again, we'll take a pause on the podcast because it is torturing you.
It's like taking an ice pick and shoving it in my ear.
I can see it has derailed our conversation several times. My guest today is Mark Mann. I want to ask you so many questions. I do want to get back into how you actually broke through and got connected with the first person that broke your career. Who broke it?
I don't know if I like the word broke.
Okay, who pushed you
break through? On through to the other side?
Oh, I actually lost my thought. This is what's great about doing a podcast. I have one thought. I go, I should reintroduce a guest. Completely lost
who
my thought.
Who is this guy? Who are we listening to?
Yeah, we're listening to Mark Mann. I believe that if I played for you a track off of a CD and then played a track of an MP3, you could tell the difference.
Oh, God, yes.
Why? What is it? What's the difference?
Well, one of the maybe reasons for my success is that I wasn't just playing guitar. I did a lot of different things. I'm an engineer. I'm a producer. And working with, I think, one of the greatest producers ever, Jeff Lynne, you learn things. You learn techniques in the studio. You learn about all these different things. And again, it's that striving for excellence and quality. When you process audio into the original compressed MP3, the algorithm that does that loses fidelity, and it loses high end, it loses some low end. What it's doing is it's interpolating it so that your brain can't tell that some of the bits aren't there, but well-trained ears can hear it. But there's new technologies, and one of the things that I did for you, if you notice, the files I sent you for your theme are rather small files, but those are M4A files. They're the next generation.
Oh.
They're not MP3. They're M4.
And I was told, do not listen to these unless you're in a quiet place and have good headsets.
Yeah. Well, it's more like that's the bane of modern existence creating music, is you do all this work making gorgeous sounds. Like I was in the studio with Ruby 8 the Fig last week doing amazing sounds and background vocals.
Watching my comedy too.
By the way, Sharon Eliashar, who was born in Jerusalem, who's the singer for Ruby 8 the Fig, watched your show on Sunday, and she texted me today, this morning, going, I watched the show. It's amazing.
Oh, that's great.
So she loved it. Anyway.
And I just used her CD as a coaster.
There you go. There
Ruby
you go.
The Fig,
which is by, it's a play on the Ruby 8 of Omar Khayyam, that famous poem of the 11th century.
Yeah,
it's
so famous, I can guarantee.
Yeah, none of your listeners
know what you're talking about.
So when you do audio and you work really hard and then you get it out in the world and people are listening to it on their phones off the phone speaker, they're listening to it off of these horrible ear pods over Bluetooth. It's like, but all you can do is make it sound as good as you can.
Even with this podcast, if I listen to the board audio, it's very rich. Like these files, they're an hour, they'll be several gigabytes. Each track. And then I send it to somebody. I don't know what they do to it. But they
make it from the big to the little.
They desecrate it. Ernesto and I, poor Ernesto, I should explain this. He'll send me the audio and I have so many notes about the sound because it doesn't sound as rich.
The problem is the compression to make it so that it can be small enough to be sent over streaming services. Like, what streaming services do you use?
Right. I don't use any, but no, I do. Sirius is what.
Well, I mean, as far as like you put your podcast on YouTube,
Spotify,
you put it on Spotify,
Apple Music. Previously, iTunes, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's still iTunes. It's whatever they want to call it. Yeah. It's still iTunes. To make it so that the file isn't too large for people to send over internet, they have to make it smaller.
But why with voice? Why does it?
Well, voice doesn't have as much material in it as a full recording of music with lots of frequencies and stuff. So you don't learn. You don't really notice it change too much on the voice.
Okay, so now you're at UCLA.
Uh-oh.
You're getting a master's degree in music.
Excuse me while we turn the bus.
Are you studying music or are you like playing?
I started as a math major, and then I went, nah, I want to be, and then I took sort of side classes of music because, oh, you know, it's like, what are you going to? And I just decided, luckily the folks like your folks, they said, yeah, you know, you want to do music, go ahead. I had a great teacher there, Roy Travis, studied with Samuel Krokmalnik as conductor, and had all these great teachers there, and then just kind of stuck around, got the master's as a choral department with Don Weiss, being the, you know, arranging and conducting for the choir and
really good. And your main instrument is guitar.
Yes. And
how do you end up on stage with Eric Clapton?
That's a journey that I, you know, every once in a while. And this is why
the first great Mark, give us the goods. You're avoiding it. Let me tell you how you tell the story.
Let me tell you.
I was playing at UCLA one night. I was playing at this
club. It's
never
like
that. So-and-so saw me.
It's a slow burn. It's a slow burn. It's not an explosion. It's being the guy. It's like opportunity meets preparation.
Yeah.
So little by little, things would happen. When I got out of college, I worked at a music production facility, Bluefield Music in Hollywood.
Okay.
Great guy. We did all these, you know, jingles and TV themes and da, 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 da. And there was a friend of his, Don Droughty, who would do a charity thing where he would take clothing and food to Indian reservations. Hmm. And he did a thing, and he was a real close friend of Herb Albert of A&M Records. So here we are doing our little music thing in Hollywood, da, 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 and he goes, I want to take this band on the road, we're going to go to the Indian reservations. And I went, great. So we did that. And then after that, he brought us into A&M Records. Mm. And once you have, you know, you can show, I know what I'm doing and playing and we're recording. And we did this whole album that all the proceeds went to the charity. And then you bump into people in the hall, you do this. You know, it's like, it's a little bit like when something comes up, make sure you know how to do
it. So you were a studio musician.
Yeah, yeah. And then...
Who was the first person you bumped into in the hall?
Oh, God.
Come on!
Well, Herb Albert came in at one point to hear what we were doing, and that was a nice, that was a big kick. And let's see. God, I mean, the list would be... First of all, it's a long time ago, and I don't know if the memory's all there, but, you know, just a lot of people were in A&M Records. There was... Joni Mitchell would walk through. You'd see, you know... Carole King, I ran into Carole King at a rehearsal. And these are people that you know and love because of their songwriting and their singing.
Go ahead, sorry.
But anyway, the first big tour on stage was because I knew technology, I was helping everybody in Los Angeles get into computers and music. I midwifed every human being in LA into how to use computers to do music so that everybody who was writing for TV and film and songwriting, Christopher Cross, I worked with, okay. Stephen Bray, who was Madonna's producer, all these people I met because I would show them, I would bring them the stuff and say, here's how you use it, and then would work with them.
That's a surprise to me. I don't see you as a techie person. In fact, I don't even think you have an iPhone because you have a green text, which drives me nuts.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So you're a techie computer.
No, I have an iPhone.
You get along with Oingo Boingo Elfman because isn't he very progressive with technology?
I actually got Danny in like 1985 to get off of a one-line green LED Roland sequencer onto a Macintosh computer with software so he could start writing his scores more efficiently. And then I did all of his MIDI gear and all this stuff to make it so that we could write all this stuff. And so I've been with him the whole way of helping him do his writing. And he plays it in and then sends it to me and I turn it into the notes.
What do you think of my setup?
I love it. I like this little
Yeah.
Rodecaster, whatever.
Yeah, it's a Rodecaster Pro.
Yeah, it's good.
I've got Fed heads. Do you see that?
Oh.
Yeah, so we're both richer.
See, now we're geeking out on that.
I have a cloud for mine, which works better. You have a Fed head. These are all, this is because we're using Shure SM7B mics, which need a gain boost. These were the mics that Michael Jackson used before assaulting little boys.
Use it on Thriller, allegedly
assaulting little boys. Yeah, his estate could still sue me.
There's a whole routine on the word allegedly.
Yeah, I guess you have to say that now. Allegedly, Marcus performed with ELO Jeff Lynne. He's allegedly performed with Eric Clapton, Prince.
No. Those are all verifiable online.
I don't know. It could be AI. You could have been popped in.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
I don't trust him. But yeah.
Just like Forrest Gump. They just digitally put
that's
him in
I
all
think.
Those.
That's
yeah,
what I
that, that was all just.
But I suspect the reason that you've had so much success and work with these guys is you're easy to be around.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I guess.
Nobody watched Ronnie Adams backstage.
Oh, what?
No, I think that you're very easy to get along with, and you want to have you on tour. Like, when I look for openers to go on tour with me, they have to be chill.
Oh, they of course.
They can't be...
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you got to be able to hang with them in the green room.
Right.
And that's... So, a little bit of a story about how it went along is like... Danny and Oingo Boingo, they were doing a big tour, and I actually auditioned to play keyboards, and I went in, played, and got the gig. Yeah. So that was like going out with them, and, you know, Dead Man's Party is a huge hit all over the world for Halloween and everything. Anyway, a lot of great songs, a consummate performer, just did two shows in Irvine and San Diego, and we were playing. He's doing the Hollywood Bowl, Nightmare Before Christmas, for three nights at the end of October. For That's my plug.
Danny Elfman is.
Yeah,
he sold out three nights at the Hollywood Bowl.
It's Nightmare Before Christmas Live, which is the film, the Tim Burton film Nightmare Before Christmas, which Danny wrote all the music for,
the
songs, and he performed Jack Skellington. So what Danny does is he performs it live with live orchestra to the film.
Will you be there?
Yeah.
Will I be there?
If you want.
I think I do want to be there. I was going to go away, but now I think I want to be. Do I go backstage and meet everybody?
You know, I'll have to see. You know, you're a little edgy. Maybe after the show, I'll get to the after party.
Don't you think it's a big deal for Danny Elfman to meet me?
See, I would love him to meet you. He would love you. The thing
I could bring the band out.
The thing is most artists don't want to interact with people they don't know before a show.
I totally.
They want it after, and you just how'd you like the show?
Yeah.
That's when it's cool. But
I totally get it. And I don't think I even want to meet him.
You were just
I actually don't want to meet him now.
You were just doing a routine that I've had to deal with like hundreds of times.
I don't want to go to the bowl ever again.
Really?
It's right there. I could walk to him.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah. I don't know if it's close to him, but I'm close to the bowl.
So, yeah, we're going to do that. And he's an amazing singer. And then he's the, you know, one who first got me touring all across the United States was with Oingo Boingo.
And you've been a partner or collaborator with him for how long?
Years. I think I just said 85 a minute ago.
Yeah, I mean, what's going on?
So what is that? I hate to do the math.
This is a podcast.
I don't want to do the math.
You have to open up. Finally, the leaf blower / tree cutter is gone. And we can relax and enjoy this conversation.
Long enough to say you talk about artists and great people who have excellence. And Danny is definitely one of those. He's an amazing musician and amazing performer. Yeah. So I've just really enjoyed. And, you know, he can call me at 1-2 in the morning and say, I got something I need to do because it's got to go to London tomorrow. And I do it. He knows he can count on me. And that's the other thing. If you're talking about helping people get into the biz or whatever, you have to be able to sacrifice to do whatever it needs to take to get people what they need.
When you're on stage and you're playing with these masters, is there a part of you that wants to be the front man, the person that wrote the song?
No, I do that on my own. I have my own band projects. I have my own things, which is the other plug.
Let's go. Let's do the plug.
Lefty and the Hat Man.
Lefty and the Hat Man. Yeah. That's another coaster.
There we go. We got another coaster.
There's Ruby Ate the Fig.
Look at this. He's set for life. He's got coffee and green juice.
Look at these coasters you brought me.
So
Send me the MP3. You know that I was good friends with Robbie Steinhardt, who was the violinist for Kansas.
Wow.
Who came to my show. You know, before you were coming to my shows, I used to do a bit about doing a show in Kansas and people wearing overalls. And I said before my show in Florida, they wear overalls. Like, I didn't know they wore it at nighttime. I thought it was like a farm. They call them bibs. There was a guy in the front row. And
I was in Texas a week and a half ago.
And were they wearing overalls or bibs?
No.
A guy in the front row didn't have a shirt. And then one of the things was unbuttoned and his nipple was out. This little whore in the front row. And I was doing this theater in Kansas, and I walk out, and as my eyes adjust, I'm like, I think everyone's in overalls. Did they just come from the farm, or is this like nighttime overall wear?
Yeah, because you know you're big with the farm crowd.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah, I know.
It's like you talk about all that stuff, like milking and chicken eggs. And
hate to tell you, sold out. Cleveland's not sold out.
Yeah,
Cleveland should be sold out.
Well, damn right.
Yeah.
Let me know. I'll call the guys at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and say, hey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just say, hey, get your butts over there to Arnie Adams' show in Cleveland.
That. Yeah.
It's that, like, that would be amazing. We want to have some.
Well, I'll tell you what I have to deal with that. Well, you have to deal with it too. Constantly promoting and selling tickets.
Oh, my gosh.
It's the bane of my existence.
Yeah. It used to be that there were, you know, other people and other agencies and, you know, all this other stuff I handle. But nowadays, it's almost like because of the social media and internet and everything else, it does come down to the individual doing it for themselves, even for bands, it's really hard.
Yeah, I just watched a documentary on wrestling, and they have to, like, these small wrestling outfits, like regional wrestling, and they're just trying to sell, like, 100 tickets, and there's, like, 15 wrestlers, and I'm like, oh, and they're as desperate as comedians. They really are. When you've played with all these people, was there anybody that was just, and don't say the name unless you want to, atrocious? Like, have you ever met somebody that you admired and then you played with them?
Not really. Well, I mean, no, actually. There's stories. You know, as artists who were around in, like, say, the 70s and stuff, and they had their big moments, there's a lot. I mean, I've played with Al Jardine of the Beach Boys, and what a gentleman, and all these other. And then there's other people who have been around for a long time. And I don't know about you, you're younger than me, but when you get older, this traveling shit gets to be hard.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. And I should finish my Robbie Steinhardt story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Violinist from Kansas.
Yeah, he was in the audience in Florida. I was doing a show in Tampa, and I said, is anybody from Kansas? And this table laughed because he's in the band Kansas. And we became friends, and I did the bit. And the bit is like, do women find overalls attractive? And and how do they take them off as they're, you know, getting intimate? And it was probably not even that funny a bit. But I was doing it for a while as I was developing new material to fill time as I developed better material coming off of.
Where in Florida were you?
I was at Tampa. I can't remember the venue, but it was sold out. But Robbie said, I'm going to send you my new music. I said, just email me some MP3s. He refused. It had to be the physical. It was like, you only listen to this as a CD.
Well, so the CD quality audio, even though it's not as great as the studio quality audio, is better than an MP3 by a factor of 10. I mean, it's, if you're listening off a CD, at least you're getting 16-bit 44.1, you know, AIFF files, audio files. And
that's a CD.
Yeah. And so a song might be 60-70 megabytes of audio, whereas you can put that through the MP3 process, it'll be like 4 megabytes.
And what's a WAV file?
A WAV file is just another file format that
was, but it's the richest, right? Isn't it?
It's what all the formats. It was a Microsoft created file format back in the 90s, I think.
What's the highest resolution of audio?
It all depends on two things, bit rate, and now we're getting real gear.
Oh, let's talk. I got a Zoom H4N something recorder. Stuff, yeah. I know the settings.
It's bit rate and bit depth, in the sense of, is it 24-bit audio at sample rate 96K, which is really pretty good. But they go up to 192. It goes to 192. And I have a good friend, Ryan Robinson, who worked at Warner Brothers forever. Now he's over at Disney as their tech, and he's talking about going to like 384. He's like going to super duper. It's like it's going to be so clean and pure that you're not even going to be able to tell that it's a recording. It's just going to sound like real life.
I love it. You have such a great voice. I feel like you should be doing voiceover or something.
I have done that in my past. I mean,
you took time. I asked you. I approached you. How annoying is this? It'd be like if somebody asked me to write a joke. It'd be so annoying. I said, could you write my theme?
You know, we were talking about Florida, and I was going to use that as a segue.
Oh.
Your friends who wrote the original, I want to learn about that, because they mentioned Florida, which I'm assuming they are from Florida.
Right.
And I don't even know their names. Who was the person who
It was Harlan Williams.
Harlan Williams.
The comedian.
And was Kevin the other guy? Was it
Kevin is in the Bare Naked Ladies.
Okay. So you have played this on the air, and I've heard it before, and then you sent it to me. And I just want this to be clear, is that Harlan is singing this with an acoustic guitar in like a living room with like a miniature
they're on a deck, and they put their iPhone. See, Harlan and I are good friends, and we send each other these goofy videos all the time. Usually we're in front of Wetzel's Pretzels and we're doing something stupid, right?
With or without mustard.
Yeah, I don't know. So we don't buy, we're not buying shit there. Although now that I mention it, Wetzel's, you better send me some stuff.
I want some pretzels.
Yeah, I was on Corolla the other day, being attacked by Corolla, and I used a mug, and it was...
You should be honored.
Yeah, I had a coffee mug that I just took from the cupboard, and it was this coffee company. They saw it. They reached out to me. They're now sending me coffee. This is the way the world should work. You're getting me...
It's a plug.
Don Julio.
Hey, come on.
You know, my stove broke.
Maybe I'll get a Don Julio bottle after this.
We should all. My stove broke. I'm not even going to say the brand. It's a high-end chef stove.
Okay, now we're turning.
No, I'm angry. I'm fired up.
Yeah.
And the guy comes to fix it. One burner's out, $640. And so I reach out to... This is a big company.
You know, but if you lived in a different part of town, it'd only be $400.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
You know, you cross that border...
Yeah. So I reach out to them. I said, hey, listen, do you want to exchange parts or service on this thing with the company, the big company?
Oh.
In exchange for me talking about it on the podcast or something. And they said no. Most people don't say no.
All right.
Super 73 just sent me a bike, an e-bike. That cost a lot more than that.
Uh-oh. Be careful.
All right. It's still in the box.
So back to Harlan.
Yes.
Thank you,
Super 73.
I wanted to give a shout out because it was he who wrote this original thing, and you sent it to me and said, yeah, you do this with a couple of people who come on the podcast. Right. You do. So I kind of listened to it, and I changed a little of the words. Yeah. I sent you, and I edited
it
down.
I changed Carmen.
I changed the editing a little bit, so there's aren't empty bars and things. I tightened it all up, and then I made this cute little,
song sheet. I want you to sign this. I've never had song sheets.
Well,
look at this. It says Orny Adams, theme one. It actually has composed by Guy and Kev.
Because I didn't know what the guy's name was. I only knew it was Kev because he gives him a shout out. What's his name, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big time composer, musician, Mark Mann, who did this for me. This should be signed and it should be framed and put on my wall. Do you want to hear other people's takes on the theme?
You know what? Does it make any sense to have them hear the original and then do mine?
No, they know the original.
They know the original.
You know the original. This
We ain't plugging anybody else. This is about mine.
Okay, well, just play yours.
I did another one last night for you.
Yeah, you did too.
So let's just do the soft one first.
Okay. What happened was you wrote that. I asked you, is it annoying when I approach you and ask you to do the theme for me? Or
No. I mean, it was a kick because, first of all, I like what Harlan did, and it was kind of fun. And I went, you know what? I mean, it was so lo-fi that I thought, you know what? I'll just try to make this a little more hi-fi.
But then I gave it to my friend Eric, who's an audio guy, real audio guy, and he played the guitar, and he added the electric guitar and all that sort of stuff.
Oh. It was,
this is...
Okay.
There's two people on there.
All right.
Oh, so yours, now your version, you did a soft version, which to me... Is who's the female singer? Is it the Fig Woman?
No. Let's play it and then I'll tell you.
Okay. So you did this softer version. And
this was like I did the ideas for the harmonies and the changed words, and then it came out. And then I went, it's kind of like a, because he played it on acoustic, Harlan. So I thought, well, I'll do acoustic so it's not too different. So this is the acoustic.
This is the acoustic version, and this was the original one that you sent me. And then at about midnight, I got another email from you that your girlfriend had Yoko'd it all up. She got involved. She said, Orny doesn't want this soft crap. He wants rock and roll. You're rock and roll. And so she changed
it. Here's the first one.
Here's the first one.
Oh, that's the second one.
That's the second
one. That's the second one.
Okay, we'll edit that out. No, we won't. Okay, here we go. First one, Mark Mann doing the What's Wrong with Orny Adams theme.
Another sunny day in California for ya. Listening to our funny little friend. He's a friend. He's got laughing eyes. He's got a great big smile. What's his name, guys? Orny Adams. Has funny
Put them all together and what have you got?
You've got Orny Adams. Orny.
I love it. I love it. And you're such a geek because one of the lines is, his name's Orny Adams. He's got funny atoms. You're a nerd.
I wanted to update the words so that it's like you have laughing eyes rather than crazy eyes.
I love it.
And then a great big smile instead of great big hair.
Yeah.
I tried to do something that was a little bit more about being a comedian and being funny. So there was that changes. And then I'm trying to figure out, I don't want to just keep saying his name over and over at the end like it was in the original. So what rhymes with Orny Adams? Funny Adams. So it was like, and that's the concept of is it's not that, you know, you're made up of strange atom material. Yeah. It's that you have funny in you. Your atoms are funny.
Thank you.
And that's what makes you so damn funny.
Thank you.
And that's the whole idea of that.
I love that. Now, should we listen to the next version or should we talk about this now?
Well, you know, let's talk about, you said you wanted to hear about how that happened.
Tell me the who's singing?
Well, just to put it out there, there's no one performing on that but me.
That is there something you need to tell me?
Yeah.
Are you a woman too?
I take these hormones. No.
Yeah. What's going on?
I thought you'd get a kick because I actually started this 2 days ago at about 11 in the morning, exactly 48 hours ago. Yeah. I went, I better do this. So I wrote this out in my software and then I use software that is AI software to make vocalists. And that's Cheryl, sounds like Cheryl Crow.
Yeah.
And Channing, a singer I work with, and Letitia. These are the SCL. It's actually computer language. It's actually AI singers.
Wow.
So, and the nice part about that is that I can change the quality. I can change the phonemes. I can change the vowel sounds. I can do all this stuff. And sometimes I use it just as a mock-up. Like when I'm trying to do something for somebody else's track, I'll do a mock-up of some background.
Should singers be threatened by this technology?
Well, you know, this is what the WGA and the SAG strike is all about.
I feel like I'm crossing the line right now by playing
that. Well, you know, the fact is that you don't have to worry about it because this is just a gift from me to you. And you use it however you like. The tool for me is that within... I did that acoustic version by the end of, you know, the day, Thursday or Wednesday. What is today? Friday? Anyway, and for me to be able to go, okay, I'm doing this and I got these harmony parts in my head and I'm going to do, and the fact that I can put it in there and immediately have something that I can hear. And I tweak it. It's like, it doesn't just come out like that.
So is that you actually playing the guitar?
That's my guitars. Yeah, I just played acoustic.
And what are the other instruments backing it or behind it?
It's acoustic six string and a 12 string and a stand-up bass.
Did you play the bass?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, but
because you can have instruments on there too, right? That are digital.
This is a me playing bass sample, in a sense. It's a Spectrasonics.
So how long does it take you to do this?
It took me a couple hours to do the harmonies and the vocals, and then I transferred them and I put them into my sequencer.
Oh, I feel like I should give you the tequila back. Now I feel like you've given me too much.
And then the guitar, actually, it's funny. You were on KFI.
Yeah.
I think it was just last night or something?
Yeah,
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah. So I got a text from my girlfriend, Debbie, that you're going to be on KFI, and I'm going, well, I'm recording his song right now. So I did the guitars in about an hour, maybe an hour and a half. And then it's mixing. It's all like making the sounds come out and making them all sound good. And I liked it. So I went, this is cute. And Debbie heard it and said, well, this is great. I like the way it sounds, but it's a little too sweet for this guy because he's rock and roll.
That's
he's
right. Like, I'm rock and roll.
So
I'm Ginger Baker.
I remember that you liked the Stones. So I, after dinner last night, I just took out some of the arpeggiated finger picking guitars and I got out my Telecaster and I turned it into the Keith Richards tuning.
Which is what?
Well, many different tunings. That's one of the ways he gets that sound for all the stuff is he tunes things to a different place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I took it out and then I did this one, this rock and roll version for you and see. That one I added some drums to.
So how long did it take you to, once she screwed up, there you are relaxing, finally enjoying. You know what happened to me today?
I had just eaten dinner.
You know what happened to me today? I wake up, just so you know what it takes for me to do this. I'm up at 6 in the morning preparing. Not only am I, look at all, I don't want to brag, but look at all the notes I have when I do a podcast.
This is a man who cares about excellence.
I'm prepared.
Does his homework.
I'm prepared. I'm about to go on the podcast. You're 20 minutes away, and I get emailed the article about tipping. So I'm like, I'll open with that. So I'm running around.
I still haven't told my tip story, which we'll do later.
Okay, I have to set all the cameras up. I have to make sure the lighting is proper. I have to make sure all the cards are working.
He's his own
the
crew.
SD cards. I'm doing everything. Doing everything. I print out all the material. I load Mark's songs into the Roadcaster board. I mean, it's a lot of work. I finally sit down. I finally have a second to take a breath and eat a piece of carbohydrates and watch 2 minutes of TV. The minute I sit down, I go to take a bite. The emergency broadcasting signal comes on.
Today?
I have to put the bite down. I have to go over to the TV and skip. Yeah, skip the message. Why are they still doing the broadcasting message in 2023?
I don't get it.
And so,
for me, I have the sort of studio musician late night biorhythm. So it's always like I'm working till 12:30, 1:30 at night, and I lay down. I want to turn some TV on to shut the brain down, and I turn it on. It's always fucking 2 a.m. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's always 2 a.m. when they put that broadcast. We're now checking our system.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, please.
Yeah. And that's what I imagine. You were finally relaxed for the night. Debbie comes in and says, hey, Mark, hey, come on. The guy wants rock and roll.
Well, you know what? And she was right in the sense that I actually have four other station IDs that I did for you that I never got a chance to finish. I didn't get a chance to finish them before coming today. So I'll finish them later and send them to you.
All right.
But they're for the podcast. It's What's Wrong. I did things like little station IDs of What's Wrong with Orny Adams.
I love that.
Yeah.
I would have liked that right
all
now.
All the girls, Cheryl and Channing, everybody singing the station.
What about
station
you? When I asked you to
That's do- me singing in there too. I'm okay. Doing all the male voices.
When I asked you to do this, I figured you were going to take out your electric guitar and just do it. Like in one take,
like
in
instrumental?
Your yeah, just do it.
No,
you don't have to do a Danny Elfman production.
No, I wanted to make the words, you know, different.
I wanted to tighten it up,
and it makes it sound like. So now play the rock and roll version.
Well, I want to hear your tipping story first.
Oh, all right. So this is just basically that you talk about. It is an issue, and you got to remember that in Europe there is no tipping.
Yeah.
And that's just, this is all just the prequel to the story.
Okay.
So that maybe we need to sort this out because I gotta say I'm tired. The one that took me over the edge is that my dad is still around. He's 96. He helped get the guys on the moon back in the 60s. He's an engineer. I gotta buy him groceries that get delivered, and I'm on there and I'm doing, I won't mention the name of the supermarket, but you're doing it and you go through it and they're pre-adding a tip.
In the supermarket?
For the delivery. For the delivery.
Okay.
They're pre-adding the tip before you do anything. And you go, wait. So you got to go, well, you know, the guy's a driver. He's doing anything. So you okay. So you do that. The guy brings it to the wrong house.
Wow.
You go, okay, I ain't tipping you ahead of time anymore. I will give you cash at the door when it shows up.
Yep.
And it's the next time, another time, it was somebody else's order. He came to the right house and put all the bags there, and it was somebody else's groceries.
That's happened to me before.
But
I
they want to tip beforehand.
I'll tip it. You bring somebody else's groceries that they paid for. I'll tip you. I agree. The pre-tipping is out of control.
It's like, wait a second. Tip is T-I-P, to ensure promptness.
Well, that's right. So if you give it beforehand, that's the origin.
You didn't get a chance to to thank them for them doing a job well and promptly. Meanwhile, the whole thing with you guys and the line, you and Adam Carolla, the line at the Starbucks, it's like you get up there and they're already tipping you when it's built in when you're getting your order. And you go, well, wait a minute, I didn't get promptness. I got here 15, 20 minutes ago. And because I'm waiting in the douchebag line, I didn't get promptness.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Not only that, but after the order is placed, they've got comatose kids in the back who are basically right. trying their hardest to do the job.
Well, they've guilted us. They've guilted us into tipping everybody, and it's out of control, and it's too much. I don't mind. Listen, I'm a generous tipper. I said on my last podcast, I gave somebody 35%.
You know what? When they
really, because they made the meal better.
When they do a good job and it is something that you reward after the fact for a good performance,
yeah.
that's when it makes sense. But the fact that you could find out, wait a minute, they added a surcharge before they
yep.
added the automated
right.
tip.
Right.
And you're going, wait a second, who am I tipping here?
It's out of control. And I'm talking about it all the time. And when I say this, it doesn't mean I don't support workers. I don't support the people working hard that they deserve a tip. I'm just saying, all of a sudden, everybody, like I'm expecting when I get off an airplane to see a tip jar at the front for the pilots. The person that checked me in, like, it's like, what is there? I should have
it's,
a tip jar on my.
It's like you got to walk around with like you're going to a strip club with ones or fives.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, excuse me, can I sit down now?
Yeah. Let's play the rock and
okay,
roll
so,
version.
So this is the just as an aside, I know that Orny likes
Who's
a little.
Ronan?
Not you. Ronan was somebody
another comedian.
Yeah, it's another
going
another,
on.
Yeah. Orny likes a little bit of rock and roll.
Yeah. This one feels a little Dylan-y to me.
Maybe play
All
it.
All right.
Oh, that's the same one.
Okay. I want them to see.
This is the mellow.
This is the mellow one. I'm fading it down just so you can see the difference and hear the fake AI singers. Now, this is...
Fooled your ass.
Yeah.
You said thank everybody.
Well, I thought it was the fig woman.
Really?
Yeah. This... Here's the rock and roll version.
Sharon,
you decide. Okay, we already like that better. Everybody likes it
better. It needs to be louder. How do I turn it up?
Oh, my God. Welcome to Orny
this,
Adams.
This is when
it's
you're trying
nap
to.
Time.
This is trying to get laid.
It's nap time with Orny Adams.
No.
No, it's great.
This is because it was in Florida and it was acoustic guitars.
No, it's beautiful.
And this is Southern California.
This is beautiful.
This is the California sound.
It's beautiful. Now let's rock it out.
Another sunny day in California for ya. Listening to our funny little friend. He's a friend.
What's his name, guys?
Orny Adams has funny items.
Put them all together and what do you got?
You've got Orny Adams. Orny.
Yeah! I love it. That one gets me fired up.
Oh, well.
Fired up. Gets me in a good mood. Makes me happy.
We like that.
I have a music question for you.
Uh-oh.
There's a, where Robbie Robertson and from the band, and they're playing, I think, the Wait or something, and it opens the video. It's playing for change. I love these videos on YouTube where they record street performers all over the world and put it together.
Oh, right.
But it opens, now it's, of course, Jump the Shark, and they're using famous people. So Ringo Starr, at the beginning, he pretends to call Robbie, and he's the drummer. Ringo's a drummer. And he says to Robbie, what key is it in? And he says,
I think that's
demented.
The joke.
Oh, that's a joke?
Because
a drummer doesn't need to know what key it's in, right?
I have a great story, a Ringo story, if you want it.
I
want
to hear it.
I was, you know, recording with Jeff Lynne. We were doing a new ELO record at his studio at his house. And, you know, we'd been doing a lot of different tracks. And George had come in and put Slide on some songs. And Jeff wanted Ringo.
What's Slide?
Pardon?
What is
slide guitar?
Okay.
Jeff wanted Ringo to put drums on a track or two. Anyway, so the drums are set up in an adjacent room in the living room, which is, you know, a little bit away from the studio. But I had gone out to pick up, I don't know, some technical thing like an extra hard drive or something. When I was gone, Ringo had shown up. So he's sitting on the drums. He's playing and Jeff's showing him the song. Doesn't matter what key it's in, but he's showing him the song.
Okay.
So I walk in and I've got a package. That's the hard drive. And Jeff goes, oh, okay. Go, you know, go put that in the studio and then pick up a bass. And I went, okay. So
pick up a bass?
Yeah. So I put the hard drive down in the studio and get a, you know, Fender Precision Bass and go back where they are and plug in and start playing. And I'm having this like out of body. I'm going, I'm playing bass with Ringo Starr right now. And he's looking to me to cue him on the changes of we're going to the chorus or we're going to the bridge. He's like looking at me like, because the affinity between drummers and bass players is that they play the low end, the bottom, the boom, 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 and the kick drum and stuff. But the gag was, is later on, I don't even remember if it was later that day or in, like weeks later, I went to some event and Ringo's there and he goes, oh, it's the delivery boy.
Why'd he call you the delivery boy?
He thought I had just, that I was some guy who had brought something to the studio and just sat down to play. He didn't know that I had. He hadn't met.
So if you just show up, Ringo calls me with you?
He calls me the delivery
boy.
Wait
a minute.
Up till this day, he says, oh, it's the delivery boy.
Wait a minute. Do you have Ringo's phone number?
I don't know.
Who can we call? Wait a minute. So Ringo Starr, if you just show up at the studio, Ringo will tell you to pick up an instrument and he'll just play with you?
No, it's that he'll call me the delivery boy because he kind of didn't know that I had been playing with Jeff and all the other tracks on the song.
Yeah.
So he just didn't know who I was then.
But how do you make that shift? You show up to play regular guitar and then somebody, one of the Beatles...
Well, the funny thing is I don't even remember whether I knew Ringo was coming that day. He just was there when I got back with the equipment.
What is that like to play with a Beatle?
It's pretty cool because you respect who they are and what they've done in their life and recognize that it has a lot to do with their heart. It has a lot to do with how they feel about music and the way they play. And I have some really good, famous bass players that, by the way, Tony Levin's on the Lefty and the Hat Man on some of the tracks. Great, great bass player.
And by the way, you sent me some of those tracks. I listened to one. I loved it.
I thought you might want to play it. I thought you might
the
like
first
the
first one I loved.
Dumbstruck?
Yeah, I loved it.
Dumbstruck, yeah.
I wanted to play it, but I know what will happen.
Yeah, I know.
The studio...
I thought you might connect with that one, because that's a lot about what you're about.
Yeah.
Which is just completely dumbstruck with what goes on
it
in the world.
It is so good. I encourage everybody to listen, and I'll follow you, and... Go see your live shows, which we'll get into a second. But
it's really nice to be playing with someone who you respect who they are, the music that they've done in their life, and then there's that sense of they're accepting you and as you know, an artist, like, you know, it's this what drives us to do this is that, you know, we want the adulation of an audience. You want to be accepted. So it's a really nice thing when you have someone that you respect accept you.
Yeah, it must be amazing. And then when you're on stage and you're playing with a Paul McCartney and a Jeff Lynne and Ringo's on the drum kit or whatever, when we're talking about the Concert for George, which is amazing. You've got to see this. It's amazing. At one point, Paul McCartney plays something on the ukulele.
He does the intro on ukulele.
And then the whole band sort of, did the band know to kick in? Like it felt like all of a sudden someone went, bump, bump, bump. What is this?
We may not get to this time. I might have to be asked back to go through.
I forgot about this.
This is actually a...
Are you channeling each other? Is it one person?
Well,
do you become one single organism? What is the word? Organism on stage.
Eric Clapton was the music director. This is the commemorative book about the Concert for George. And it's pretty special and it's signed by Olivia on the inside.
And what is this exactly?
This is a...
I'm really hoping there's more tequila inside.
No.
There's...
It's, you know, it's a large book with photos, and then I think there's... This has the laminates. You might like that. That'll get you backstage.
Yeah.
You got
this can be backstage at the Bowl for Danny Elfman?
No.
I'm not invited to? What?
How do you know you're not invited? Where'd the tickets go?
And I'm giving you tickets to my next show. So do you want to come to the Ice House... October 6th, do you want to come tomorrow night? I'll be at, it'll have already aired, but I'll be in somewhere. And then I'm at Comedy and Magic Club next Thursday. Great club.
This is the original program. I want to. Tomorrow night is Saturday night at the Ice House.
No, tomorrow night I'm at this stand up comedy club in somewhere Bellflower, California.
Bellflower, which will be after this is on the air.
Yeah, that's why my mind's just like.
So do the next one. When's the next one? Aren't you playing
next
Irvine?
Thursday, the 28th of September. I will be at the Comedy and Magic Club. Then Friday, October
6th. I
want
to go to that.
You got tickets.
I want to go to that.
You got tickets. It's an emotional
Comedy Magic Club and you? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's great. That's where Leno plays all the time. By the way, Leno listens to me on KFI, and he calls me after every time I'm on.
I think I've heard one of those.
No, but he just, like, he called me after Wednesday. He has really encouraged. Why aren't there more encouraging people in the world?
See, just like you respect him and how nice it is for him to... You know, give back to the community. That's the same kind of thing. It's people who are accomplished and know that their self-worth is there.
Yeah.
That they can be generous with other people.
Yeah.
So anyway,
how many people own this? Is this just for
only the people who are there?
Am I allowed to touch the book?
Sure. I mean,
hold it up so people.
Well, it's you know, concert. I don't know where the camera is.
I got it right. Well, you see this thing in front of you? That's a camera. Look at that.
Oh, over there.
Yeah.
But wow, here's the nicest thing,
I want to look at this program again.
This is here. This is,
I don't get it dirty.
There's George.
Wow. Look at this camera right there. You can see it. Yeah, there you go.
There's George. And,
boy, you must've been younger because this font is very small in the, brochure for the concert for George.
And here is, Olivia's, signing to me with love.
This is George's wife.
George's wife, Olivia. Yeah. And she said something really funny to me after the sound. I think it was either right before the sound check. We'd had about 5 rehearsals the week before. And then we were loading into the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
And I was in the seats and she was sitting in the seats. And I went over and said hello. And she goes, I didn't know you were playing all the hard parts.
didn't you tell a story once about how Clapton wasn't in the mood to do the lead one night?
Well, it wasn't so much that he was in the mood. There's just, you know, lots of photos of the people that were involved. And there were some great players from Andy Fairweather Lowe, who plays a lot with Eric. And also,
would have been nice if everybody signed each other's copies.
You know what? I wish that had happened. But, you know, musicians are all over the world doing different things.
Yeah.
So there's
are there pictures of you in there?
Yeah.
Show a picture of you.
Well, I got to know.
And then I'll tell you the Robbie Robertson story quickly.
There's a couple with me with Paul. I don't know if that's visible.
Yeah, there you are, right there. Where are you? Your hat. Same hat. Let me see. I'll look in the monitor and see if you got it. Yeah, there you are. I'm pointing at you. Same hat. Look at you. It's cute. You look exactly the same. That's great. I mean, you're a big part
of this. There's Ringo. There's Paul.
You're a big part of this. Like, it's so
it's really a pretty special book.
Like, when you came up to me at the improv the next day, I sent my father the video of you in it. I said, this guy comes to my shows.
And here's Paul playing the ukulele.
Yeah.
And he tells the story about how George loved the ukulele. And I, you know what? As I was driving here on the freeway in L.A., you had asked me to bring a guitar. I didn't have time to grab it. I thought I should have grabbed a ukulele.
Would have been fun if you did something.
I would play a little ukulele.
You've never played the guitar in front of me. In fact, when you came to my show at the improv,
I played the piano. Yeah, well, there wasn't a guitar in there, was there?
No, there wasn't. I should play that because you played.
No.
Why not?
That was just a little bit of fun in
the
green room.
Key and everything was great.
Yeah, it was great.
So let me tell you quickly, if you watch The Last Waltz.
Yes, the band.
There's a moment where Eric Clapton is playing and his guitar strap breaks. And he looks at Robbie to pick up the lead. And when we watch Clapton play, his hands just move up and down. It's like effortless. He glides. Yeah. And then he handed it to Robbie. And Robbie's hands were all tense. And it just sounded differently. And that's when I said, I see the difference.
Well, part of like the band's thing was great songs and great rhythms. And not exactly showy solos or things like that. It really wasn't part of their sound. Do you know the keyboards? I can't remember the keyboards player's name in the band. Do you remember?
In which band?
In the band?
Chuck Lavelle.
No, that was the Stones, isn't it?
No, Levi Strauss? Yeah, wasn't it?
We'll go with that.
No, wasn't it Levi something?
Levi Strauss.
Who was it for the band? Who
yeah,
was it?
I can't. You know what? It's a senior moment. I can't remember the name.
All right. Is there more of this?
So one last
show?
Picture. Okay. One last picture. And it's kind of a cool one.
Let me see.
Which is this is at a rehearsal.
There's Mark right
there's,
there.
There's me and Danny Harrison. And I'm kind of helping him learn this, the chords to one of his dad's
Who's
songs.
Who's this guy? Right here. Turn it around. Who's that guy? I see him in a lot of things, too. Do we know who that guy is?
I think it's Gary Brooker.
Huh.
Oh, no. That's, is it? I can't tell. It's a little... Tom Scott. That's Tom Scott, the sax player.
Okay.
There's Andy Fairweather Lowe in here and Tom Scott. And I have so many stories that we've never even got to.
Well, you should have written them down. You should have sent it to me.
My God, I know what this is.
We got to wrap it up.
I know.
We have to wrap it up. Mark Mann is a musician, guitar and keyboards, arranger, orchestrator, conductor.
Uh-oh.
Creates music for records, TV, and
film. I'm going to have to tip you now.
Get out your money. Credits on over 50 albums, won a Grammy.
There you go.
More than 80 feature, what is that, 5? Put it away. That's trash. Mark is currently producing new albums for his band Lefty and the Hat Man, which sounds like...
Guess which one I am.
The Hat Man.
Yep.
And for the Middle Eastern rock band Ruby Ate the Fig, who's... They're huge fans of my comedy.
Yes, very much.
You know what else you are, Mark? You're actually a really good podcast guest.
Uh-oh.
You're, like, so easy to talk to. I thought this episode might suck.
Uh-huh!
And it turned out it was great.
Well, I don't
know. Show up with the guitar.
Well, we're going to need to do another one because I got about an hour's worth of stories. Just you wanted to hear this. That was the premise of this, was to hear the stories
no,
about
the
this.
No, the premise was I wanted to know how you became famous. I sort of got hints of it. I'll find out more.
Well,
I'll get you.
It took 35, 40 years. It ain't going to happen in half an hour.
But are you that good? Are there people as good as you? Why are you on that stage? I'm at home. I'm a guitar player. And I'm thinking, I can do what he's doing. Am I right or am I wrong?
You will come to another show. I would have loved it. We might do the Abbey Road show again soon here in LA, and then I'll have you come. And the point is that you enjoy the live performance, and then you can see and hear.
I listen to mostly live music.
I mean, you saw some of the video. I think I sent you one of the videos.
I thought it was great. You were telling stories. I think you're great. I'm honored to call you a friend.
I'm honored to call you a friend.
Yeah.
And you got to hear some of what it sounded like, but it's over a little phone. It's somebody with a phone holding it up and recording
I don't have the ears you have.
Well, when you hear it live, you're going to enjoy it more.
Let's end on this, Mark Mann. What is your proudest moment in your career?
Oh, my God. Being on stage playing George's songs and feeling the love in the room from the musicians and from the crowd. The specialness of that night cannot be described in words. It was palpable. It was something that was really there, and it comes through in how special the concert is when you watch it on DVD.
Yeah.
But to have been there and lived it and helped be a part of that. What else can you say?
Yeah.
I actually, you pinch yourself and you go, well, I can die now. I just did that.
And how did you find out you were going to perform on that?
It was a little bit like we were recording at Jeff's house. All of a sudden, Eric Clapton shows up with a really cool hot rod, drives on the driveway, like a really cool, decked out, beautiful. Anyway, and it was after George had passed away. It was about, 6-8 months previous that he passed away. And Eric just said, we want to do a memorial concert. To Jeff, to say, will you be a part of it? And Jeff said, of course. He produced Cloud Nine, and we were working on a posthumous album called Brainwashed, which if people haven't heard George Harrison's Brainwashed, go get it and listen. It's an amazingly great record.
Yeah.
And we finished it all up with his son, Danny Harrison, and Jeff Lynne and me. And Ryan Ulyate, who's a great engineer who recorded the concert for George, was also involved. Anyway, so we're there, and I forgot my thread.
Why? When did you find out you were going to perform?
Oh, so Eric is there and going, we got to pick songs. And they're sitting in the living room, and they got a couple acoustics. And I'm just like going, it's Eric Clapton. He's playing guitar right there. And he goes, we want to do some of the songs from All Things Must Pass, but some of them are really hard. I don't know how we're going to do them, like Beware of Darkness and all that. And Jeff just points at me and go, he'll do it.
Wow.
So I went
to meet him. Why do I want to meet Jeff Lynne? I don't think he even speaks.
He's pretty, quiet, reclusive kind of guy.
So he pointed to you and he said, he'll do it. And that's it. You were anointed at that moment.
We had done a VH1 Storytellers.
Yeah.
And we had done this tour. We'd done a live video shoot called Zoom of the tour. But the tour was just about to take off all across the world. And a certain thing happened.
He anointed you in front of Clapton.
Well, he knew that we had done all this ELO stuff.
Yeah, but Clapton didn't know. He's not watching the Zoom.
No.
That was it. That's how you got in.
It was because Jeff knew that when it came time to saying we need to have something played, Mark will play it.
Jeez.
No questions asked.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I kind of went, okay. But, you know, the real funny part about it is that we went over there to play maybe one or two songs as far as Jeff was going to do.
This is at Jeff's house?
We were going to do Inner Light and I think Isn't It a Pity or Give Me Love.
Yeah.
Give Me Love. We were only going to do two songs and then we went to the rehearsal. And this is the story I told on that video, which is we show up, we start playing a little during the rehearsals, and little by little, Eric goes, move his amp next to mine.
Ooh,
that was upgraded. That was the moment.
Yeah.
That was the moment where it was like floating off the ground, out of body experience.
Yeah.
Eric Clapton said, because I was like on the side, you know, over here by the whatever, and he went, move him center stage next to me.
I wanted to ask you, how did you positioning on stage? Now I know.
Well, let's mention the other guys. The Dave Bronze on bass, phenomenal bass player. He's sitting there playing all of the parts from McCartney and everything, and he's playing all this stuff. And Henry Spinetti is on drums, and we had Jim Keltner on drums and Ringo on drums. We had just the most amazing players. We Jim Horn on saxophone as well as Tom Scott.
I'm sure you're leaving somebody out. You'll feel bad about it later.
But anyway, there's guys up there who, and it's love for George and the fact they had all played on George's records, and everyone wanted to be there to be part of that.
I love that.
And you know what? It gave a great legacy of everyone loving George's music, which is the way I look at it. Is every once in a while, George goes, you did okay.
Yeah. Mark, man, you're a cool dude. You're the delivery man, as far as I'm concerned. Delivery boy, that's what I'm calling you for the rest of my life.
Let's go out with that rock and roll version.
We're going to go out with the rock and roll version. Yes or no, does every great living musician respect, admire, and partly fear Bob Dylan?
Oh, my God. He is iconic. And there's one last story.
No, we don't have time.
All right, then.
Yes or no?
Next time.
Yes or no?
No. They don't.
They mock him behind his back with his stupid lyrics. Did you ever listen to his lyrics? Some of them make no sense. She cleaned on a whole nother level. I mean, he's got... me and my friend Tom mock his lyrics all the time. There you go. Mark, man. But I do want to hear more about Dylan. And...
There was. We thought he was going to show up. Thought he was going to. There was an
action for George.
No one knew because how capricious he can be. There was a thing. There's a photo of everyone on that stage standing around the grand piano on stage and going over what was called the Zimmerman contingency protocol.
Oh wow! See, you do fear him. You fear and respect him. I knew it. Nobody was waiting for me to show up.
And people don't know that Bob's real last name is Zimmerman.
Of course.
So the Zimmerman contingency
proposal
was what to do if he walked in.
Wow.
Because no one knew whether he was going to show up.
Yeah. Well, there was a time in my life I didn't want to meet Dylan. I want to meet him now.
Oh.
I want to talk to him.
Well, I have a good friend who's working with him.
Let's make that happen.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty.
Sounds like it's not happening.
Well, it's pretty much one of those things that, you know, I want to hang out with him, but I don't get to.
Wow.
So what? If I can't be there, yeah, it's going to be hard to get you in.
I want to thank the listeners of What's Wrong with Oney Adams. This is episode 92. Mark Mann is my guest. Friend, honor. Brought me tequila. Everybody should bring me tequilas.
Uh-oh.
If you want to keep
it's
in touch
gonna
with
me. It's going to be a
requirement
for the podcast from now on.
Yes. Yes.
Must show up with tequila.
Could you make jingles for my, like this? If you want to email me, it's whatswrong@OrneyAdams.com. My tour schedule is up at OrneyAdams.com/tour. Thank you, Ernesto Hurtado, for mastering. Although I think you're going to master this one. Okay, you're not. Thank you, Ernesto. I thought you were going to take the hum out of there.
I'll get the hum out of the bad sections. That's it.
Oh, forget it. Forget it. Forget it. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Orny.
And where can people find you? MarkMann.com?
Oh, you know, I'm off the grid.
Okay.
I only come out for Orny.
Well, go see one of his shows. You might see me there. Dude, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're amazing. That was fun.